Well, good morning, everyone. I'd like to begin the Upper District meeting on the September 9th, 9 a.m. I will not have my Zoom camera on, but I'll have my audio on. So let's go ahead and begin the meeting. And if we look at the agenda, we'll go to item number one, Pledge of Allegiance. So if we could begin that.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Great, thank you. At this time, we'll go to item number two, which is a roll call of the board of directors. If you hear your name, please signify that you are here. Director Santana?
Here.
Director Fellow?
Here.
Director Trevino?
Here.
Director Contreras?
Here.
And Director Chavez is here. Let the record show that all five directors are present for this morning's meeting. Go to item number three, which is the adoption of the agenda. Is there a motion to approve the agenda as presented?
So moved by Contreras.
Second by Fellow.
It's been moved by Contreras, second by Fellow. Any discussion? If not, let's take a roll call vote on the approval of the agenda. Director Santana?
Aye.
Director Fellow?
Aye.
Director Trevino?
Aye.
Director Contreras?
Aye.
And Director Chavez, aye. That motion passes by a 5-0 vote. And so the adoption of the agenda has been approved. Item number four, public comments. Christine Hawkins, is there any public that wishes to address the board at this time?
Good morning, President Chavez. No, we received no public comments. Thank
you. And for those in the audience, if you have your hands raised, I will identify you at this time or recognize you if you wish just to address the board at this time. Do we have any of those?
I do not see any hands raised at this time.
Okay, then we'll move on and continue with the agenda. We'll go to item number five, which is committee reports. There are three: government affairs, administrative and finance, and water resources. Those reports are in our packet. So if there's any chairperson that wishes to add to those reports, may do so at this time.
I'm good.
Okay. So we will move forward then. If not, you could address that at your director's comments as well. We'll go to item number six, which is the consent calendar. We have three items on there. Is there a motion to approve the consent calendar?
So moved by Contreras.
So moved by Trevino.
Okay. It's moved by Contreras, seconded by Trevino. Any discussion on the consent calendar? If not, then we'll take a roll call vote. Director Santana?
Aye.
Director Fellow?
Aye.
Director Trevino? Director Trevino?
Aye. Aye.
Director Contreras?
Aye.
And Director Chavez is an aye. That motion passes by a 5-0 vote to approve the consent calendar. We'll go to item number seven. There are two items before us. The first one is 7A, which is to approve the recommended legislative positions that we have in the legislature, as well as the Congress in Washington, D.C. The Government Affairs Committee recommended approval of these. Is there a motion to receive their recommendation?
So moved.
Second.
Trevino.
Fellow.
Okay, so it's moved by Trevino, seconded by Fellows to approve the committee's recommendation for legislative positions. Is there any discussion on those items?
Not a discussion, Mr. President, but I thank you, if I may, to Patty Cortez, because we did request the legislative policy principles that we adopted. And Patty, thank you for sending it out to us.
Thank you. Okay, then we'll move with the motion. So if we'll do a roll call vote. Director Santana?
Aye.
Director Fellow?
Aye.
Director Trevino?
Aye.
Director Contreras?
Aye.
And Director Chavez is aye. So that motion passes by 5-0 vote to approve 7A. Now we'll move to 7B, which is the Los Angeles County Local Formation Commission, which is LAFCO. There's recommendation. It says staff requests the board of directors to authorize the general manager to cast a district vote. So, Tom Love, can you give us a brief report of who the candidates are so we can make that recommendation?
Certainly. So there are four candidates or nominees to consider. The first on the list is Robert Lewis. He is with Roland Water District. I believe he has also done some work in Laponi Valley Water District. So that's the first one. Dan Medina is the Greater Los Angeles County Vector Control. Mel Matthews, and I know Mel pretty well, is a general manager of Kinaloa Water District and is also on the board of directors of the Foothill Municipal Water District, another metropolitan member agency. And then Sharon you can read her name. It's unpronounceable, at least for me. And while I did work for Crescenta Valley Water District before I came to Upper District, she had not been on the board, and I have not met her. But so she is a county water district board member. And so typically what staff does not make a specific recommendation, but things for the board's consideration is, you've got water district representatives, one vector control. Certainly it would seem to serve our interest if we were to choose someone from a water district, and then also someone who is close to our locale. The other thing to consider is you want another metropolitan municipal water district like us. That would be Mel Matthews, or someone from a county water district like Roland or Crescenta Valley. So those are the things the board can consider. But if I were to make a suggestion, reading through these in terms of qualifications, background, and location and commonalities with Upper District, I would certainly take a serious look at Robert Lewis, and then possibly Mel Matthews.
Mr. President?
Yes, Dr. Pella?
I don't know all these people, but I do have, I know about Robert Lewis, and I think that board is kind of compatible with ours, and so that would be my recommendation, but I'm not close to all of any of them.
Okay, I would accept that. I met Mr. Lewis a couple of times. I went to a couple other meetings, and I think our criteria should always look at the locality who's closest to us, and then look at their positions. In this case, he's on a water district. Those are usually the two criteria that I weigh heavily on. And so Mr. Lewis fits that bill. Are there any other nominations or recommendations to the board?
If I may, Mr. President, I also believe in Robert Lewis. He's been at the WQA meetings at Watermaster, and he is very involved in our San Gabriel Valley. So he knows our needs in our community more than any other three candidates. So I will be supporting Mr. Lewis.
Absolutely. Okay. Any other comments or nominations from the board?
I did notice that Melvin Matthews received his on the letter the independent on the independent special district alternate from Richard Atwater. Isn't he a big metropolitan person?
Yeah. Tom, can you address that?
Yeah. So Richard Atwater, he has been general manager of three metropolitan member agencies. In fact, he was my boss for 17 years of my career. Rich is now the chairman or president of the Foothill Municipal Water District Board of Directors, and is one of Charles or Director Trevino's colleagues on the Metropolitan Water District Board. Rich also worked for Metropolitan back in the late 1980s, former employee of the Federal Government Bureau of Reclamation as well. So he's had a long career in water.
I recognize the name. I haven't met any of these candidates, so I'm good with Mr. Lewis. I was just curious about that at water.
Okay, good. All right, gauging the board, it looks like I'll accept the nomination for Robert Lewis from the Roland Water District. And if there are no other nominations, let's go ahead and put that to a vote. So let's take a roll call vote. So this is for the nomination for Robert Lewis to LAPCO.
Mr. Chair, this is O'Neill here. Do we have a motion and a second?
So move on the motion.
And I'll second it.
Thank you.
Trevino moves.
So O'Neill, because there are nominations, is it necessary to do a second on that or not?
Well, if the board's going to take action, it has to it can only take action by motion, resolution, or ordinance. And so, if we're going to take an action to endorse this individual, given that you've had your discussion, which is I guess tantamount to considering the nominations, to actually make the recommendation, we need a motion. So it sounds like Director Trevino moved, and I think Director Contreras seconded.
Director Phillips.
Oh, Director Phillips. Okay.
Yes. So it's moved by Trevino, seconded by Fellow to nominate Robert Lewis to the LAPCO board. So let's take a roll call vote. Director Santana?
Aye.
Director Fellow?
Aye.
Director Trevino?
Aye.
Director Contreras?
Aye.
And Director Chavez is an aye. So that motion passes 5-0. So Robert Lewis is our nominee. Or we're voting for him there. Okay, so let's go to item number 8, which is informational items. There are two that are in our packet. It's the press releases and newspaper articles. You could read those at your leisure. And then we'll go to item number 9, our attorney's report. Mr. O'Neill.
Yeah, a few things, Mr. President. A short report. It's the last meeting. We've done a fair amount of administrative work concerning the district's employee handbook, working with Evelyn and staff concerning that. Work with the GM and the board on the GM performance evaluation, which is going to be the subject of our closed session today. On contract front, reviewed and improved some agreements with Suburban Water, and also working currently on the cyclic storage agreement. Corresponded with the general manager concerning the San Diego County Water Authority versus Metropolitan case. And that looks like about it. But just to update on the San Diego versus Met case, you may recall that there were several cases that had been filed beginning in 2010. The 2010 and 2012 cases have gone to final judgment, and the parties are about to start litigating the 2014 and 2016 cases. The cases are have very similar issues. Metropolitan, it was determined that Metropolitan's inclusion of certain elements of its rate structure into Metropolitan's transportation rate and its wheeling rate was improper, primarily the water stewardship component of the rate structure. So as a result of the judgment in the 2010 and 2012 cases, Metropolitan, I believe the total figure was paid $44 million to San Diego, 28 in the judgment and the remainder in interest. So there'll be a hearing in November to determine who was the prevailing party on those two cases. Mm-hmm. And, also, there'll be a status conference on how to handle the 2014 and 2016 cases. The prevailing party issue is a little interesting in that San Diego originally prevailed on two theories. One, that the water stewardship rate was improper. They prevailed on that, and that resulted in a $28 million award. They also allege that the Metropolitan's inclusion of the state water project costs was improper. And Metropolitan eventually won on that in the Court of Appeal, and that's worth $160 million. So it really dwarfs what San Diego achieved with the water stewardship rate. So it'll be an interesting discussion when the court considers who is the prevailing party. There's a good chance, I think, the court could say there is no prevailing party, and thus there'll be no attorney's fees awarded. Each side will have to absorb its own attorney's fees. So this will continue to be I'll continue to report on this as events arise over the course of the fall.
Okay.
And that concludes my report.
Thank you. Any questions to our attorney, Lord?
I don't have any.
Okay. If there's no questions, thank you for your report. We'll go to item number 10, engineer's report. Mr. Johnston.
Thank you. Thank you, President Chavez. Hello, everyone, and the board. Hello, everybody. Hope everybody's doing well. It's just as bad here as it is where you guys are. I mean, we've got smoke and we've got ash everywhere, all the way through the valley. My house in Laverne's got it, so it's everywhere. It's a mess. And on that same topic, I'll just let the board know and then the audience know that I did have a text conversation in the last couple of days with Director Contreras about the fire and what the potential or possible expected effects are on the watershed. And I'll just maybe save questions, just let you know what our discussion was about. And what we talked about was that, first of all, this is the fourth or fifth fire we've had in the last 6 or 7 years, maybe less than 10 years. In the San Gabriel Canyon watershed, which is up above Azusa. It's pretty crazy. I mean, there's been two in the last 6 months up there. It's just crazy what's going on up in Azusa Canyon. So yeah, there's a lot of impacts up there. The effects that we have really are, it's mostly the effect is losing our watershed and losing the vegetation up there, turning it into ash and then having the rains come and then having it all washed down. The water quality impacts aren't as bad as the flooding impacts that we see. You folks all know what happens when we lose the watershed. And then if we have a good winter, a lot of material comes down and it just creates a mess. So we normally work with LA County Department of Public Works, Flood Control, the Water Conservation Division. We normally work with these folks after an event like this and make sure that when we do have runoff, that the water quality is checked before we divert any of the water into our spreading ground. So one of the initial impacts might be a bypassing of some of the local water. It'll be bypassed on down into Central Basin and possibly even get clear to the ocean if we have significant rainfall or runoff, just to protect our spreading grounds. But that's really the real case here. There's no real direct effect indirectly. Yeah, there's some ash and some water quality. But the vegetation, the loss of vegetation and the potential runoff, that's the bigger one. That's where you see the real damage and we see the impact. So while we all hope for a wet winter, you know, that could cause some problems in our canyons. Anyway, for the regular hydrologic conditions report, I'll give you the key well, just as of September 4th, just this, was measured at 203.1, so it's hanging in there above 200. It did drop about 0.6 of a foot from the prior week, so we're doing pretty good there. It's down about 1.5 feet, almost about 1.4 feet, about 1.5 feet from the prior month, so it has dropped a little, and we're about 6 feet lower than we were a year ago, which represents about 50,000 acre feet in the basin, which is actually quite a bit. We still have almost 200,000 acre feet of imported water that's likely storage, so we're sitting in pretty good shape there. In our canyons, up in the canyon storage, we're sitting about 46% of capacity, almost 40,000 acre feet in our total canyon storage up in San Gabriel Canyon. You know, we'll see some ash fall on that water, that's for sure, but we have about 40,000 acre feet up there. We normally try to end up the season, which we're headed to right now, with about 10 to 15,000 acre feet in storage, the minimum pool behind the dam that they maintain, which leaves us around 20, 25,000 acre feet being going to be delivered. They did open up the, as far as we know, this was just yesterday because this is Wednesday, it was intended that they would open up Morris Dam and start releases, 500 CFS out of Morris Dam. They delayed those because of a lot of things, fires and some of the other things. And this release may be delayed because of the current fire, but the plan was to start those releases yesterday. Basically going down the river, we'll get about half of that in the San Gabriel Basin. They're trying to move about half of that down into Central Basin. In my view, honestly, maybe as dry as things are right now, I don't know how much is going to make it to Central Basin because we're going to be soaking up a lot of water in the river as they release that water. So that's what's going on with the local water. Imported water, there's no deliveries. USG3 is off right now. Nothing from San Gabriel, Upper District or Three Valleys being delivered. San Gabriel District, the Four Cities District, as you know, they have their own state water project contract for water with a table A entitlement. They are finishing up their delivery of that table A entitlement. They delivered a little over 1,000 acre feet, mostly the San Gabriel Canyon spreading grounds during the month of August. And I believe in talking to the folks at San Gabriel District, August deliveries is going to wrap up their deliveries with their table A entitlement. They have no more entitlement left, so that should wrap things up. Other water issues, I will let you know, and I kind of missed it the last month, but I'll let you know. I normally report production to let you know what's going on in the basin. Total production from the basin during 18-19 was a little over 190,000 acre feet for the whole year. Total for this last year, which ended just at the end of June, so it ends June 30, total for this most recent fiscal year was a little over 191,000. So production is down. It's good. I mean, that's a good thing. Just 2 years ago, we were at almost 210. So we're a good 20,000 below what we were just 2 years ago. Conservation, whatever's going on, but folks are conserving water. So production is down in the basin. Last item is Title 22, water quality, the testing that we do in the basin. During August, 87 wells were sampled under the Title 22 program. Those are sampled at the well site to meet all the drinking water regulations for the water agencies. During July, 45 wells were sampled under the Title 22 program. We received no new notices of wells shut down due to water quality concerns. And lastly, I'll report that you had presentations to the board before. Tom was very good to provide the presentations on the whole PFAS issue with the new regulations and the new sampling requirements for PFAS. The state is just now getting their ducks in order to send out the sampling and testing requirements to water agencies. We actually expected them in June. Then they said July. We didn't get them in July. Then they said August. Well, just this week, we're starting to see those sampling requirements being sent to the water agencies. We got copies of them. We're not seeing much in the Raymond Basin up in the Pasadena, above the Raymond Fault. And we're not seeing much sampling requirements there, but we're seeing quite a few in the main San Gabriel Basin. And just a general update on that. The Water Master, which coordinates most of the well site sampling for the San Gabriel Basin for all the water agencies, has budgeted to do this PFAS sampling for the water agencies. For those who don't know, Watermaster and the producers decided a long time ago that it worked better to do this kind of at the well site sampling to meet the drinking water requirements. It was much more efficient to do it as a central group than to have every agency try to do their own. A couple of reasons for that, I'm just kind of letting you guys just talking a little bit, but just to let you know why that makes sense. A couple of big reasons. One, with the Division of Drinking Water, they normally assign different division engineers to different areas of the basin. And because they're allowed a lot of latitude, sometimes you'll get inconsistent direction from the division engineers at Division of Drinking Water for agencies that are right next to each other. And having one agency coordinate with Division of DDW on all of the sampling, there is a tendency to make sure things are consistent throughout the basin. So everybody is looked at the same way. All the regulatory requirements are looked at the same way. So that helps. The second part, to staff a person to go out and sample these wells and to coordinate with the labs and get the samples to the lab and back and the results and coordinate with DDW to get the reports in, it's a lot easier to have one staff person do the whole basin than just to have every water agency have to staff up for that and have a person that's designated for that. And again, you get the same consistency with the laboratory and the same consistency with the samples being delivered to the lab, the results coming back and being reported to DDW. So that's why Watermaster does the basin-wide sampling at all the well sites. And a primary report I wanted to make is that the PFAS sampling is going to be started very soon. It's very, very expensive, but the orders from DDW to do the sampling have just come out. And that's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Johnson?
Yes, Mr. President.
Yes, Dr. Pelham.
Can I ask Steve, what was the acre feet again in the fiscal year 2018-2019?
It was just a little over 190,000. Total pumping was 190,156 acre feet. Total pumping from the basin. In addition to that, there was imported water delivery, which added about another 25,000 acre feet was delivered as direct deliveries. And it's very similar this year. This year was 191,356. And again, it was more about 26,000 acre feet of imported water was for direct deliveries for the basin.
Thank you, Steve.
You're welcome.
Yes, any other questions?
Yes, Mr. President. I had a question. You mentioned, Steve, what is the department that's going to be doing the PFAS testing on the wells?
We're going to do it. DDW, it's a Division of Drinking Water. It's a division of the State Department of Water Resources, the State Water Resources Control Board. It used to be a Public Works, but it was called Department of Public. But they looked a lot like Homeland Security because they had the same initials. So they changed it to Division of Drinking Water. But it is basically public drink, you know, the state public drinking water requirements. So that's the state agency that requires the regulatory requirements. They send them to the individual water agencies and say, this is what you need to sample for. And then the water master is going to make sure they're in compliance.
Well, okay. So the water, you mentioned someone's going to be kind of overseeing several of the wells, water master.
Master, yes, and we do a lot of that for them. We actually have samplers on staff that go do that. And interesting, just as we're talking about that, because in case you're talking with somebody about it, so you have that knowledge. The strangest thing about not strangest, but the unusual thing about the PFAS sampling is when they did come out with sampling and testing requirements, they set up some very unusual and very, very strict requirements for sampling. Wells for PFAS, primarily because the detection levels are so low for these chemicals, and also even having hairspray or body lotion or colognes or anything on your hands around the sampling can affect the samples. So all of our samples are certified by the state to make sure we comply with all of that, and so we're very careful with our samplers, and it's much easier to have a staff of samplers that are all qualified than to try to have 45 different water agencies all have a sampler that they try to keep certified. So with the state of California, we're actually certified by the state to certify other samplers. So if somebody does have somebody they want to sample, we can put them through a training and train them to sample too. So I actually could be a good sampler because I don't use hairspray or anything like that. So.
And then last question, if I may, Mr. President.
Yes, please go.
You mentioned it's a hefty bill, right?
Yes, yes.
And how is that being, do you know how that's being paid for? Or?
Yes, Watermaster has several assessments. One of them is an administrative assessment, and that goes into the administration of the Watermaster. And they have an assessment already that includes the Title 22 sampling that I report on. This is regular sampling. It covers that. They actually had to increase it a little bit to be able to cover this also. I think their assessment administrator, I don't have it right in front of me right now, but I believe the Tony might be on the line, or Kelly. I think the assessment right now, administrative assessment, is about $10 an acre foot for the basin. And that basically funds all of the water master operations, legal counsel, and the engineering that we do, and the water quality sampling.
Okay. Thank you.
You bet.
Excellent.
I have a question, Mr. President.
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, where do you get the samplers from? How are they trained, Steve?
Initially, it's a good question. Initially, we actually have had the same samplers working for us for probably 15, 20 years, so they've been here a long time. Initially, they're trained by DDW, the state Division of Drinking Water. The state will, when we first started doing this kind of sampling for like VOCs, which are volatiles, you got to be real careful with volatiles because as you take the sample, you don't want to aerate the samples and things like that. So we had training originally for VOCs, and then we had perchlorate, and we had 1,4-dioxane, and we had, we had chrome-6 and other things. All of these samplings generally require a certain amount of training from the state to make sure you're sampling properly. So, yeah, our people get certified by the state. The state, as I mentioned earlier, the state got a little tired of certifying a lot of people. It takes time and effort for them to do it. And since we've been doing it so long, they offered, and we said, sure, and then they certified us to actually train other people. Just recently, it was kind of a good question. It's interesting part of the answer. As part of the fact that the San Gabriel Basin is a Superfund site, and most of you're aware that there's a Baldwin Park operable unit, South Omani operable unit, the Omani operable unit. It's a major Superfund site with EPA involved on groundwater contamination and groundwater cleanup. EPA coming into the basin. Just recently, and this is in the last 3 or 4 years, set up a program where it was like a technician program that they fully sponsored, a training program for folks that had no experience, usually high school equivalency, high school equivalency, or possibly junior college level to come in and be trained for Superfund type activity in the field, sampling and testing of Superfund sites. So they actually set up a program and certified people and had a whole bunch of young folks go through the program to get certified by EPA to work in these kind of field situations. When we recently needed to add a new sampler, one of our samplers got good enough that we worked him in the office more, and then he's now doing more office work and less in the field because he's been promoted. He needed more help in the field. We went to that program. We went to EPA and asked EPA for a list of their graduates. We interviewed two or three of them, and we actually hired one of the EPA graduates from that program. The local involvement program to make sure you're getting the local community involved in the process. And we've hired them and we've got him working there now. So that's kind of how it works. It all starts with DDW, but yeah, we work very closely with DDW on that.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions from directors?
Yes, I do, Mr. Chavez.
President. Yes, go ahead.
First of all, Steve, thank you for bringing up Cogswell Dam. And my question that I asked, thank you for bringing that to each and every one of us to understand. Yes. But yeah. Also, during the fire, I know in the past we used Cogswell Dam, Morris Dam, and to pull out water. Yeah. Was that used, those dams, were they used by the helicopters to suck up water and use on the fire?
I don't know for sure. I would expect probably 95%, 90% chances. Yes, if they can get to that water, they will. I live right in Laverne, right next to the Live Oak Reservoir, which is imported water stored before it goes to Waymarth, right next to my house. And I know they've been using that pond too. They use it all the time. They come in and suck water out of that and go to the fire. So certainly that water is going to be used to help fight the fire.
Yeah, because with Southern California and fires, that's what we were doing. So my question is this. I know that the fire department does not pay for replacement. Do we get You know me. You know my question, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Can we get compensation of additional water in the future to offset the water used by another department, or do we know? Or can we request some type of a replacement? Is that possible? Yeah, I don't know. You or Tom or someone can answer that, or maybe nothing else can we look into.
Well, I can tell you for at least MWD, when they take it out of Live Oak, that's before we order it. So that's MWD's water they're taking, not ours. But the local water, yeah, that belongs to all of us. That's all of our water up there in the canyon. So
since we're losing, I know it's not a lot, but since we like to account for any losses as well, could we, Tom, or look into it? That's a suggestion?
Good, but I wouldn't recommend that. The reason is frankly, if you look at the total volume of water compared to what's in the metropolitan system, Director Santana asked a similar question yesterday, it's really not a significant amount of water. It might seem like it, but not in the scheme of things. Secondly, the firefighting efforts are also protecting the water distribution facilities. And so, I think it would not be advisable in an emergency, first responders taking water out of the system to fight a fire to ask them to pay us for the water.
And I'm not asking for payment. I'm asking
for water.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, the Forest Service doesn't have any water to.
Okay. It doesn't hurt to ask.
The other thing is the fact that they are fighting the wildfire in our watershed to the extent they can protect as much of our watershed as possible, we will get more water. If they fail to protect our watershed, we won't get any water, as Steve mentioned. We'll have to flush it to the ocean.
Yeah. So,
okay.
Yeah. Good.
Okay. Well, thank you. And on that note, I wanted to share that a couple of years ago when there was a fire at along Cajon Pass on the 15th, where people were stuck in traffic and they abandoned their vehicles and their vehicles just burned. They were in the hillside. I was camping at Silver Lake or Silverwood. Is it Silverwood?
Yeah, Silverwood.
Silverwood, but yeah. We were camping there and we were at the lake in the water, and we saw the smoke over the hill. It didn't affect us. We were not evacuated. However, helicopters did go into the water, dropped the hose while people were still boating and jet skiing, dropped the hose, sucked out water, and took it to the fire site and put out some of the fire. So it was happening live, and we didn't know what was really happening, but it was interesting times to see that happen. And yeah, they just helped themselves, but it's all part of a mutual aid, and we're happy to help them out, and I think the overall goal is to get those fires out as soon as possible. So thank you, Mr. Johnson, for your report. We really appreciate it. Thank you. With that,
Director
yes.
Chavez, apologies for the interruption, but Tony Zampiello had his hand raised, so we moved him over.
I didn't want to butt in. I wanted to clarify with Al, too. If you look at my only point to make is you look at the amount that evaporates off at the top of those reservoirs, it's way more than what they're taking. So, I understand your concern, but at least it's not water that we bought, impounded, and then they take it. It's water that, it's water that's part of the Protective Association's license. And I think Tom made a good point about preserving the watershed as well.
Thank you, Tony.
Yeah, excellent point. I appreciate that. Okay, so we'll go ahead and move from item 10 to item number 11, General Manager's Report. Mr. Love.
Yeah, and continuing the discussion about the fires and the emergency situation, on a personal note, my son, Stuart, Army National Guard, he has been in Sonoma fighting fires for about 3 weeks. I think he's got another couple of weeks on this rotation, so far, safe and sound, and more importantly, protecting the vineyards and the wineries for the next wine tasting trip. So this morning, I began to reach out, starting with Arcadia and here in Monrovia, to the city staff. offering emergency assistance, although with our resources, it would be in a limited fashion. That includes coordination with Metropolitan Water District if we need to activate metropolitan connections or increase flows through those metropolitan connections. Secondly, although we really haven't set ourselves up for this, but in the event they ask, possibly allowing our office to be used for emergency responders and or as an evacuation center. And so I did want to make sure I let the board know I have indicated that we might be able to do that. And then lastly, offered our inventory of right now we have about 3,000 water bottles, and that's normally for our water bottle giveaways. I've offered that to the cities as well. I'll continue that outreach to the other cities along the foothills, just to make that offer that whatever assistance we can provide, we want to do that. Moving on to some water master matters, there is a status conference this Friday with Judge Duffy Lewis, and Tony certainly is prepared for that. I won't call it routine because it never is quite routine, but it is a regular occurrence for those status conferences. And Water Master will need upper district's appointments. We would prefer to get them our appointments by November 4th for our directors appointed to the Water Master Board. And the reason for that date is there is a scheduled hearing where the judge will review and approve those appointments. I believe that's in sometime in November. If we miss that, we can still make those appointments, but we'll have to wait until the next time the judge is able to review those, which sometimes can take a couple of extra months. So that's just a heads up for the board. We'll have those on the agenda in October for the board's consideration. Last thing, and this ties into Steve O'Neill's report on the San Diego litigation on Metropolitan Water District's rates. I do have the finance staff from Metropolitan lined up to make a presentation to at our next board meeting on the 23rd of September on Metropolitan's rate structure, and we certainly can continue some discussion along with that on the nature of the San Diego litigation, which is all about Metropolitan's rates. And then at next week's Metropolitan board meeting, well, let me back up. When Metropolitan adopted their budget, I believe it was in April, there was a lot of discussion about the economic impacts of COVID on water ratepayers. And so Metropolitan made some adjustments to their budget assumptions and initially were proposing approximately a 4% rate increase. And they made those adjustments and adopted a 2% rate increase. And Metropolitan adopts their rates on a two-year basis. So that 2% rate increase, the first year, it goes into effect January 1st of 2021. And then the second year goes into effect 1 year after that. So they made those adjustments, but the Metropolitan Board asked Metropolitan staff to come back to them through the end of August with a report on what are the economic impacts on water ratepayers and impacts on Metropolitan's revenue. And so Metropolitan staff have prepared that information. And at this point, it appears the Metropolitan staff are recommending that the board maintain what they already adopted and that 2% rate increase that goes into effect January 1st. San Diego County Water Authority has sent a letter to the chairman of the board, Gloria Gray, and expressing their interest in reconsidering that decision and not to reverse that decision on adopting those rates January 1st. The analysis Metropolitan staff had done back in April would indicate if they did that, given that they are investing on their capital program to maintain reliability and the resilience of the system and other expenses, and it's very complicated. A lot of detail goes into that. If they reduce their rate increase to zero, then we potentially are looking at double-digit rate increases within 2 years for several years after that. And so that is the concern from, I think, most of the member agencies. I can't speak for all the member agencies, but those that I interact with a lot. feel that, you know, while it is a little painful right now to have a 2% metropolitan rate increase, the compound effects later on could be problematic. And so I did mention to Director Trevino I would bring this up in, under my GM report, since this is coming up.
Let me just add that we had a meeting of the and I guess we're into the metropolitan report, or, you know, already. Tom started it off. So let me just add that the we feel that there needs to be an increase, a minimal increase, but definitely don't want to not have an increase where we end up going into a situation like Metropolitan had back in the mid 90s, where they ended up having to play catch up and proposing like 19% increases in water rates, because they had failed to increase water rates previous. So we want to do this incrementally and do it right, but also be cognizant of the fact that people are hurting, people that are unemployed, and show the fact that we are empathetic with those economic factors. So Tom is absolutely right. The San Gabriel directors feel that also that in that discussion yesterday that we should have some sort of increase and not put it off, not have a zero increase, just so that we can have some kind of incrementally increases to keep up with our infrastructure needs and our resiliency. So that's basically it. I'm glad, Tom, that we're going to have that presentation on the rates by Metropolitan staff. I think it's extremely important, and I'm happy that I really, as I said to Tom earlier, I want direction from my colleagues in terms of how you want me to proceed on this. But if anybody has anything they want to add regarding this, any of my colleagues, please feel free to let me know or email me or speak up or forever hold your peace.
I'll speak up. But I think that's a smart move, Charles, because that was a terrible large increase, but it had to be done. And some of us wondered why it wasn't done. Each year they should increment, you know, just to make it more. So I think that's a good thing. Thank you. Do it.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Thank you. And then we just go back here. Okay, so that is under the general manager report. Do we have any other questions for Mr. Love? If not, I have one question for Mr. Love. So you mentioned the Water Master status conference report, I guess, by the judge on Friday morning. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
So I received an email from staff saying that event's going to happen. Is it possible to get a link to so we could hear that, or is that restricted to just those people that are involved, just those parties?
No, everything.
Let me ask Tony Zampiello or Kelly to weigh in on that. Let's see. I see a hand raised here. Yeah, Kelly would like to talk.
Hello, Kelly.
Kelly, you're muted.
There. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah, the notices went out a couple of months ago for the original, and Tony's been announcing it at the board meetings, because you do, with the way the court is set up right now with restrictions on entering the court, we all have to go in through what's called Court Connect. And so you had to pre-register in order to be on that. Tom is going to be on it. He has the information. So I'm sure he can report to you guys, but in terms of the actual case that'll be, you know, the status update for this Friday, it is already closed.
Okay. So be it. All right. So we'll wait for Tom's report on that status or from Tony himself. All right. Well, thank you, Kelly.
Sure.
All right. So that dispenses with item number 11. So we'll go to item number 12, the Metropolitan Report. That report is in our packet. Director Trevino, do you have anything to add to that?
No, I think Tom covered it pretty well, and I just added my two cents worth. But as I said, I just want to emphasize that I want to hear from my colleagues in terms of how some of these crucial votes that are coming up at Metropolitan, the IRP, the selection of the new general manager, it's important that I hear from my colleagues about that, if you so desire. Thank you.
Absolutely. Just by the way, you have my vote for general manager.
Thank you.
All right. Let's go to item number 13, a Water Quality Authority report. That is in your packet. There's nothing more to add. Item number 14 is a Water Master report. Gentlemen, do you need to add anything to that report?
No.
Okay. Then we'll go to item number 15, which is AB 1234, compliance reports. That is also in the packet. If anybody needs to add anything to that, may do so now. If that's the case, then we'll go to item number 16, director's comments, and then we'll start off with Director Santana.
Hope everyone stays safe during these fires.
Great, thank you. We'll go to Director Fellow.
Thank you, Mr. President. I was going to call you last night. Maybe you want to talk about this, but I'd like to adjourn in memory of La Pointe Councilman Dan Holloway, who died yesterday. One of the great guys of the world. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
You know that.
Did you know that, Charles or Ed?
No.
Oh yeah. He. It's kind of spooky. He. You know, he was up for re-election. He's on the ballot, and he was in my neighborhood putting up yard signs, and he texts me the night before, and he says, hey, Ed, I'm putting a sign at your neighbor's house. I noticed you have a sign of another candidate, although there's three seats open, so you can put basically up to three signs. And I only had one sign up, and he asked me, can I come by and put a sign later on? And I said, yes. And then I got the news yesterday that he died of a heart attack like at about 2 o'clock in the afternoon, 3 o'clock in the afternoon. It was kind of spooky.
Yeah.
Okay. So we'll honor that request and do that at the end. Thank you though. We'll go to Director Trevino.
No, nothing. But I knew Dan Holloway and I concur with, everything you gentlemen have said, and we should adjourn in his memory.
Mm-hmm. And then Director Contreras.
Yes, I just wanted to make a comment because I work during the fires and after the fires with Southern California Edison, and I was asked to take some pictures and share them. I was taking pictures. I got them developed. That was before the digital system. I got them developed, and I thought, did I put a black and white film in my camera? But everything was either black, white, or gray. So when I develop it, I'm staring at it and figuring out why I didn't get no color. Because after the fires, that's all the only color you get, gray or shades of black and shades of white. So it was funny. But one of the things that I've learned doing field inspection, whether it was Mount Baldy, Arrowwood or Arrowhead and all those areas, was when you inspect, you have to be careful because not only you see what's up there and what's burned. One of our scary moments was we were walking and not only does the tree burn, we forgot about the root system. The roots also burn. And as you're walking, it's all level. You don't see anything above you. But my partner sank about 4 or 5 feet. So we learned that from here on, we're going to be separated about 5 or 6 feet because usually your root system goes above and beyond the trunk space. And we also learned that we had to carry a stick. As we walk, we poke the ground in front of us because if you're walking by yourself and inspecting by yourself, you may be stuck in a hole and no one around you, possibly for days, you have a problem. So for the people that are going to mountains and doing inspection, I hope they learn what I've learned the hard way, that we have to help each other
And, you know, like when we go hiking, we use our sticks. We need longer sticks to find out that there's no holes in front of us that we can bury ourselves in. So that was a scary moment. But every time I see fires like this today, I just pray for the firemen, everyone out there putting out fires. And, you know, especially the breathing, the environment that they're working in is very, very tough. So that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you. And then myself, not too much comments other than another story of Ben Holloway is that he was very active in our community of La Puente. He helped develop and design the veterans memorial site that we have there at City Hall. And he was a veteran in the Navy. I believe he was on a nuclear submarine as well. So he served our country. And then I stepped down from the council. My wife took over, and then she became the mayor of the city. And she appointed him to the planning commission. And about 2 years later, he ran for the city council, and they were colleagues for a couple of years there. So, he's definitely has done a lot of things for the community. So we want to memorialize him and honor him with the adjournment today. Thank you. So with that, let's go to item number 17, which is any future agenda items that the directors wish to place on a future agenda. If not, then we'll go to item 18. Mr. Attorney, we're going to close session. Is this correct?
That's correct, Mr. Chair. We'll be convening in closed session to discuss the performance review of the general manager, as noted on the agenda. I believe the general manager sent all the directors a separate Zoom invitation, pursuant to which we'll have the closed session. So we need to keep this Zoom meeting open, because if the board is going to take any action, it has to do so in open session after the closed session. So I guess now would be the time to convene to the other closed session Zoom meeting.
I have a question, a logistics one. Tom, are you still there?
Yes.
So is the board closing the current Zoom link and then going into the new Zoom link for the closed session and then resuming back to the open session? Do we just leave this on? Because I'm just worried about the audio.
Yeah, okay. So here's what's going to happen is the directors and myself and the attorney will leave this meeting. Staff will leave the meeting open for the public. So we will completely log off of the meeting, then join the closed session link that I sent to you yesterday. At the conclusion of that closed session, we'll leave that meeting, we'll close that meeting, and then the directors and attorney and myself will rejoin this public meeting with that, the link that we used to join this meeting the first time.
So my question is, we don't just minimize it, we log out completely.
Yeah, I don't believe Zoom will allow you to be on two Zoom meetings concurrently on your device unless you use a different device.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think we need to log off completely and then get back on later on this particular link.
So long as everybody understands, because I'm leaving, I'll see you in the next room. I'll see you in the next life.
Don't say that.
Okay, everyone, welcome back. We have Director Trevino not joining us as we reconvene. We have Director Santana with us. We have Director Contreras with us. We're waiting on Fellow. Yeah, just Director Fellow for them. And Tom should be with us too.
Oh, I will text him.
Yeah, here, I'll text him. And we still have 13 participants, so thank you for waiting for us to come out of closed session.
Oh, hey, Tom, can you join the open session? Yeah, thanks.
So once he joins us, okay, thank you, Steve. Once he joins us, we'll open the open session, reconvene. Okay, Tom, can you hear us? Welcome back.
Yeah.
Okay, so the board has, let me see if everybody's here. Al, Jennifer, myself. Oh, we're still waiting for Tony. Al, if you're speaking, you're on mute.
I'll just, President Chavez, we have a quorum. We're just going to report and adjourn.
Yeah. So okay.
Your choice.
Okay. No, we could do that. So okay. So the board has is reconvening from a closed session to discuss the performance of our general manager. And Stephen O'Neill, can you discuss or report out any actions that the board may have taken?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. The board met pursuant to Government Code Section 54957 to discuss performance evaluation of the general manager. A discussion was had by the board, and no formal action was taken at this time. That concludes my closed session report.
Thank you. So that means that the board will address this issue at the next board meeting in closed session and take any action that deems necessary at the time. Other than that, Mr. Love, is there any other business before the board that we need to dispense with?
No. Staff has no further business.
Okay. So if there's no further business, then we'll adjourn. Thank you for all of your work, everyone, and the participants there in the audience. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Have a great day, everyone.